I want to ask you to stretch again. I know my colleague just re-energized you, so we'll go ahead and get started. Thank you for this first slide. The last few slides that you saw were a great segue to what we're going to talk about now, because I'm actually not going to present something that's based on data analyses or even community-based participatory research, but it's a slightly different thing. We're looking at some data that that many of you may already be aware of, and making some suggestions, asking some questions. Like Dr. West said yesterday, we're going to take a Socratic approach to what we're going to talk about today. Okay? So the title is Innovative Strategies for Routine HIV-STD Screening to Reduce Racial Ethnic HIV-STD Disparities in Correctional Settings, a Social Justice Mandate for Incarcerated Populations and Their Communities. And one of the reasons, next slide please. One of the reasons we thought, I have nothing to disclose financially. One of the reasons we thought this was an important thing to talk about and to begin to dialogue about, particularly with this year's theme of social justice, is that we know a few things when it comes to correctional health. We know that for a variety of reasons, blacks and Hispanics are overrepresented in the U.S. jail and prison system. We make up about 56 to 58% of jail and prison systems, but only about 25% of the U.S. population combined. This is as of 2008. We also know that when you look both in the jail and prison system as well as at the community level, that blacks and Hispanics are disproportionately affected by HIV and STD. The rates among inmates in prisons and jails are estimated to be about 4 and 10 times as high, respectively, as in the general population. And again, we know that our racial ethnic groups are disproportionately affected when you look at all other racial ethnic groups. And again, the reasons for that vary, but they include what Dr. Jenkins talked about yesterday, racism. They include a disproportionate system, legal to criminal justice system, that affects us differently. Next slide. So some of the data that we reviewed to, as we build up to our argument and our Socratic discourse that we had, we looked at some of the data that's actually publicly available in terms of what's going on, what the data show regarding who's imprisoned and what's going on in terms of disease rates. So here, this is a table that's actually part of the Bureau of Justice Statistics Bulletin that was recently published back in December 09. And basically, it just reiterates the fact that black and Hispanic males, this is based on the actual prison data when they go and do their own counts, black and Hispanic males were incarcerated at rates that are 6.5 and about 2.5 times higher than white males. Next slide, please. They also do a bulletin looking at HIV rates. These data are from 2007-2008, also published almost a year ago, December 2009. And when you look at rates of numbers of AIDS-related deaths in prisons, and you can see those here, 05, 06, 07, although you see that there's a decline in the number, keep in mind that there's not, we'll talk about this some later, there's not a standardized process for screening for HIV in jails and prisons, and so those numbers aren't necessarily representative. But what you do see, though, is that black and Hispanic inmates are disproportionately more likely to die of AIDS-related deaths when you compare them to white inmates. The same when you talk about STD prevalences among state and federal prisoners. And these rates are across the board higher than the general population. Rates of syphilis that are about 2.6 to 4.3% of all prisoners. Chlamydia rates that are about 2.4% of all prisoners. Gonorrhea about 1%, hepatitis B 2%, hepatitis C pretty high, 17 to 18.6% of all prisoners. And one thing we do know, when you look at things that could be done, whether it's condom distribution, screening and treatment, we've looked at the studies, there are some cost-effectiveness studies that have shown that it would be cost-effective to have some type of prevention plan in jails and prisons. And we can talk later about why that may not be the case, that it's happened. Next slide. Okay. Another thing that we talked about when we started to look at what's going on and what we could potentially do differently is what's going on when people are released from prison. Again, we know there's not a standardized process that's happening in terms of HIV or STD testing, but we do know that there are high rates of HIV even when you look at persons as they are released from prison. And just to make sure you guys are aware, this is from an article that was published about a year ago. As you can see, huge numbers of releasees in this country each year, over 9 million. You can see here it broken down by men, broken down by women, and also broken down by racial ethnic group. When you look here, though, this is HIV percentages when you look at those who are released. Overall, total about 14%. For white men, about 9.5 to 14%. Black men higher, and Hispanic men also a higher rate compared to other groups. So one of the things we started to talk about when we looked at some of these data and we tried to think about what's going on and whether or not there are recommendations out there is we did a search. We scanned the research to see what was out there. And we actually, and I talked with one of my colleagues at CDC who's been working in correctional health care for many, many years as an RN. Basically, there are recommendations out there. The National Commission on Correctional Health Care has guidelines that have been published for a while. They basically promote evidence-based guidelines for correctional settings to diagnose and treat STDs. And they also have guidelines and recommendations that support the identification and elimination of barriers to successfully implement HIV and STD screening. Last year, CDC brought together some experts from around the country and talked about what are some of the barriers to HIV testing in correctional facilities. And all of the experts who were there were all in support of opt-out HIV testing. And they talked some about some of the challenges they have in terms of confidentiality and a host of other things that happen at correctional facilities. Next slide. Being that these different recommendations are in place from the main agencies that deal with correctional health care, and that's the National Commission on Correctional Health Care and CDC, what is going on? Are people actually following those guidelines? And that was the next question that we had as we reviewed the process. And what we found is that less than half of states, as you can see here, reported testing inmates for HIV at admission or at some point during the their custody. The recommendations are very loose when it comes to HIV testing. Some recommend, or some actually do the testing at entry, some do it while they're there, some do it at exit. There's no standard guideline in terms of when someone needs to do testing. What we found is that a lot of times the persons at the correctional level will say, well, you know, there's such a high turnover. Some people are in and out in 24 to 48 hours, and we don't really want to get into that. And the other thing they say, and they have a great concern about, is, well, what about those who come back positive? Particularly for HIV, what are the cost implications of people coming back positive? STD testing was even worse than 48%. They don't consistently test for STDs at all. If there is someone who's in a correctional facility and they complain of a symptom, if a man complains of a drip or a woman complains of, you know, lower pelvic pain or something, then they can go to the infirmary and be tested. So you can see there's not yet consistency in terms of meeting the recommendations that are out there by both NCCHC or CDC. So challenges and opportunities. Again, as sort of as part of our Socratic process, we talked about the different challenges. Financial are one of them. Having the different players come to the table and agree on what the process should be is another huge challenge. But we looked at the potential opportunity that's happened, particularly this year, as we talk about healthcare reform and even the National HIV/AIDS strategy. We have the strategy that's talking about, you know, reducing incidence, making sure people get into care, and also reducing disparities. And we have healthcare reform that doesn't speak about correctional facilities, and you guys can imagine it's already a very contentious act. So you can imagine that if we had talked about corrections in that context, it would have been even more contentious. But what we did talk about was the fact that over the next 5 years, and many of my colleagues have already spoken about the role of the community health centers already in our communities, and they're going to have a growing role, an increased role, as we look out over the next 5 years. I made these slides before the election of last week. So if nothing changes, then over the next 5 years, there's a discussion about moving at least $11 billion into the community health center process to ensure access to different healthcare services to people in our communities. So with that in mind, we started talking more and thinking about the fact that community health centers are actually in a really crucial place and role to be able to facilitate some of the correctional health care that that has been a challenge for correctional health systems to administer so far. Community health centers, next slide, please. Not only are they going to be poised to receive more funds, but community health centers already are in those highly affected communities. Community health centers already serve a high proportion of minority, uninsured, and low-income patients. And certainly when persons come out of correctional facilities, one of their main challenges is getting jobs, getting health coverage, and many of them will probably be serviced at by a community health center. And this graph here just kind of shows some of the disproportionate rates of service happening at health care centers. Here, the blue bars represent the U.S. population, and the red bars represent the community health center patient population. And you can see for each of those groups, Hispanics, racial minorities, persons who are uninsured, and persons who are at or below 200% poverty, community health centers are serving a great role in terms of providing health care coverage. Next slide. So this is where we really got excited, because we said, well, why aren't we doing this more? If we know that it's a recommendation that corrections and jails screen for HIV and STDs, and if we know that they don't have the financial resources, and we know that already in our communities we have community health centers and some health departments, why have we not been able to more effectively create partnerships that can provide some of the services that are lacking in correctional facilities? And when I spoke with a lot of the colleagues who I have who've been working in correctional settings for a long time, it really comes down to just people not really agreeing on what the process should be. And so one of the things we are starting to look at CDC, and you know, people are always surprised to hear that we have to find money for things we want to do at CDC as well, but we are looking for different ways to start small pilot projects and model this type of system. And I encourage all of you out there in your different communities to explore those same types of things. If you have a community setting that has a significant rate of people who, you know, come back home after being in prison or in jail, what are some of the things that can be kind of revved up at the community health center level that can help facilitate some of the correctional health needs that we have, particularly as they relate to HIV and STD? So what we basically said at the end of this process and this discussion is that as Blacks and Hispanics are disproportionately detained in correctional facilities, affected by HIV and STDs, and serviced by community health centers, it is imperative that new solutions be explored that include partnerships that will enhance services and reduce disparities in correctional settings and disproportionately affected minority communities. So what are our next steps? Again, like I said, in talking with different folks at CDC and colleagues throughout different parts of the country, and when I see patients one day a week at a community health center in DeKalb County, Georgia, talking with those folks also, who I admit are petrified of serving the correctional population for a variety of reasons. Most of it has to do with them not understanding the different needs of the population. They also, though, have challenges, and a lot of healthcare providers are challenged and don't really feel comfortable addressing HIV and STD and sexual health in general. So that's another thing that we have to work with people on. But really just trying to find some resources and create these local models of effective community partnerships that engage not just the correctional facilities and the community health centers, but also the health departments, so that we can find some way that people get the services they need, and then if it works, be able to implement it on a wider level. So what are the challenges? If you guys have been working in community health, you know the challenges are always there, and they will take a lot of education and work from us, and really trying to bring the right people to the table to continue to have the discussion. There's definitely resistance from healthcare professionals who do not routinely work with correctional populations. And another concern that the community health centers have, even though there's targeted to be, you know, $11 billion going into them over the next few years, they have concerns that they might actually be overwhelmed by all the different uninsured and underinsured populations who may begin coming to their doors for healthcare services. Nonetheless, I think as all of my colleagues have said, and as has been the theme of this meeting, it really is a social justice mandate. Prisons and jails offer a unique opportunity to establish better disease control in the community by providing improved health care and disease prevention to inmates before and after they're released. And we know that there's a high recidivism. Most inmates, when they're in, it might be for a brief time, and then they're back in our communities with us, with their families. Taking advantage of this opportunity will contribute significantly to improving the health of both inmates and the larger community.